next case on the calendar is 1301, 1323, Aaron Sikora versus Tom Wenzel. Mr. Sikora.
Worst that it could be is that a landlord is obliged to, as the landlord is obliged under the statute to comply with building codes, to do inspections.
That's correct. Under 5321.0481, it is very vague. There is no specific definition that the General Assembly uses with respect to what code we're talking about. There are numerous codes that are codified in revised code, paint code, fire code, code regarding smoke detectors. The General Assembly has clearly spoken. Once you leave that area to a codified law and switch over into the administrative law, which is the Ohio Basic Building Code, it is a complex, convoluted document that if even a person would go and pull the Ohio Basic Building Code off the shelf, there are many appendices appendix at the end of the Ohio Basic Building Code has standards from 35 separate corporations, associations, institutes, and even from a foreign government, someone outside the United States, where these standards are incorporated into the provisions of the Ohio Basic Building Code. For example, in this case, one of the calculations that a landlord would have to do if they have to comply with the Ohio Basic Building Code is look at the dead load calculations, which are under the ANSI standards, which is American National Standard Institute, which is a New York not-for-profit corporation. Those standards are nowhere contained in the Ohio Basic Building Code. You would have to write off to the American National Standard Institute to get those standards to come back in. When you deal with roofing standards, it's determined by the Canadian General Standard Board with respect to roofing. So their standards are even written outside of the United States. So it is almost an impossible task.
Inspection wouldn't do it.
Inspection would not do it. Even with a trained structural engineer, it would not do it. Post-collapse here, they were unable to find a stamp on the wood of the deck. When a piece of manufacturer is supposed to be stamped in a certain way, the engineer assumed, doing the post-collapse reconstruction, that it was number 3 pine. And number 3 pine is not supposed to have knots in it because it's used for structure. If a knot falls out, it provides a safety hazard to people. So when you look at this standard, there's a multitude of different standards for that wood that's available. The standards are written by the American Forest and Paper Association, the American Hardwood Standards, and the American Institute of Timber Construction are three different standards that are incorporated into the Ohio Basic Building Code under the appendix. So inspection would never reveal these things.
Well, here, I thought it was absence of bolts here. They put the thing together with nails. Wasn't that the problem?
That was one.
Maybe it didn't fall down before this. In 14 years, it stood up, apparently.
Yeah, it never stood down. It never fell down before that. And there were a number of different problems that were identified by the post-collapse engineers.
So that would be a pretty easy thing for somebody, for an inspector to see. That defect would be fairly...
A stamp on the wood should be there to visit. One of the problems with this, the engineer thought it should have been 10D nails, and they found it was a 70 galvanized box nail on inspection. And that is how intricate the Ohio Basic Building Code is dealing with that. These defects in this deck essentially came down to poor design and poor construction. Mr. Winslow, when he bought the property, obtained a certificate of occupancy from the city of Fairborn. And the city of Fairborn had rejected these particular plans of the deck, but nowhere in the public records have ever disclosed that they did that. There were no subsequent plans ever issued to the city of Fairborn. And the city of Fairborn never did a post-inspection as it required to do to the Ohio Basic Building Code. So a member of the public in conducting that inspection goes to public records. There's simply nothing there to give them notice that there is a problem.
Under RC 5321.04A, which calls for negligence per se, there also, isn't there a notice requirement that the landlord have actual notice?
Correct. Under the Schroeder's decision, that is one of the cornerstone principles that they have some type of notice in order to correct the defect.
But the odd thing is, Counsel, can you explain how in Schroeder's we speak of negligence per se, this court does, and then add the notice issue, which is seems incongruous in a negligence per se doctrine?
I would say my interpretation of that is at that particular page of the decision, which is page 25 and 26, the Supreme Court said a violation of a statute that sets forth a specific duties constitutes negligence per se. I interpret that as a general sentence, which is a true statement of law. But in addition to negligence per se, the proximate cause or the notice element must also be there. This statute, the Supreme Court is...
Did you say the proximate cause or notice issue? Those are two different... Is that what you said?
The Supreme Court said in 1981, and I quote, however, in addition to negligence per se, proximate cause for the injuries sustained must be established. And it's a period, it also must must be shown that the landlord received notice. So
but certainly in a negligence per se, it doesn't, those don't go hand in hand. You must show proximate cause, but you surely typically would not be expected to show anything more.
Correct.
So it is a fairly unusual analysis in Schrodes.
But don't you think that it was an adherence to all the prior case law that involved requiring either actual or constructive notice?
As long as the common law of Iowa was existing, it always required notice. In 1974, the General Assembly passed a Landlord Tenant Act to try to balance the parties, and unless the General Assembly expressly said so, it did not intend to overrule this court's decisions with respect to the notice issue. I think the impossibility that a landlord would have complying with the Ohio Basic Building Code is contained, for example, in the maintenance provisions of that Basic Building Code. In your decision, if you say that negligence per se to violate the Basic Building Code, just doesn't affect landlords. It affects everybody that owns a building or structure. The Riverfront Stadium down in Cincinnati, Synergy Field down in Cincinnati. If there's a football game in January and the Bengals make it to a playoff and there's an icy snowstorm and you have 60,000 people leaving there, the Ohio Basic Building Code says all stairways shall be kept free of snow and ice. That is an impossible standard in the state of Ohio with the weather we have. Every property in Cleveland and Toledo, you must keep those free of snow and ice at all times. There's no exception. There's no reasonable care standard. And if someone slips and falls on those stairs, it is a violation of the Basic Building Code and would be negligence per se under the standard announced by the Second District here. And it is for that reason that administrative code cannot be given rise to a legal duty because it would be impossible to comply with. The landlord would not only ask of Mr. Wenzel, he would be guaranteeing the performance of the general contractors and subcontractors. He would also have to, in an ice and snow situation, guarantee the weather. And even in certain snowstorms, if you use recent leopard or super Herculean efforts, you would never, ever be able to do that. The complexity of the Basic Building Code, I think, is also shown by how the Second District misinterpreted what this structure was. In order to get to the critical element of the Basic Building Code, which is pounds per square foot, they have to do a load rating. Load ratings are different depending upon the structure. The Second District called this a balcony. Under the Basic Building Code, it is a deck. It is a balcony has a much higher weight rating code than a deck. A deck generally is in the 40 pounds per square foot. And a balcony under the current building code has 100 pounds per square foot. So using those numbers, they were about 2.5 times off with respect to their load calculations. And a balcony has no independent supports, as in an apartment complex or condominium. The balcony simply goes up. There's no underlying supports. In this case, the outside deck had two different underlying supports there. We believe that the decision of the Second District should be reversed. We believe it would be an impossible standard to comply with as a landlord. And the Ohio Basic Building Code goes much further in ordering that certain structures meet certain guidelines other than simply landlord-tenant. Goes to commercial properties, banks, stadiums, schools, anything that is here to establish a strict liability, for example, in the case of ice and snow, would be unfair to everyone. We would ask that this court reverse the decision of the Second District.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Hess.
I'm here on behalf of Eric Sikora. It is our position that the legislature, by enacting 320.104, is in particular A1 of that section, is placing upon landlords the responsibility to comply with all building codes and regulations that report or that go to safety. And by this court's decision in the Schroeder standard, and notice is not required, unless, I guess the distinction that is made in Shrove, the distinction that I made in brief, is that the Shrove case is based upon A2, the section of 53.104 that deals with a basically a general negligence standard within the statute, putting and keeping in the condition of a fit and habitable condition. That smacks of general negligence, and certainly to make that a negligence per se without having some form of notice placed on it was difficult. And clearly,
how would you have this all work as far as you're using the building code, right? The state building code is the underlying.
Yes.
Right.
And this particular case, okay.
Yeah, so how would that work in respect to changes in the building code? Because I thought all the design and structures in compliance with the code and design date. So if the structure was in compliance with the code at the time it was built, you wouldn't have a violation, even though the present building code would define that construction, that barrier, whatever, on the property, a violation of the code.
I think that's accurate, because in order for you to violate A1 of the statute, that section, you have to violate the building code, and I think you can only violate the building code if, in fact, you were in violation of the code at the time that that code was set. And as we know, building codes will change.
How are you going to deal with the case where somebody modifies a building in some respect and a pure reading of the building code says modification, put you in, you're now going to go through the inspection, you got to bring everything up.
The new code.
But folks made modification. It was a small modification made. Probably didn't know about the building code or the requirement to bring everything up to the code. And so now they're in violation, even though they didn't touch what is out of compliance. And it's out of compliance because they modified something else. Would that be a per se violation?
I believe it would be, because if you're going under the strict, if you're going by negligence per se, you violate the code, and if they are in violation because of this modification, then they're in violation.
Even though, say, the object collapsed and caused injury wasn't part of the renovation.
Because
you get tripped into the building code on old buildings when you you undertake modifications, and there's a lot of debate. Some think change wall coverings can bring it in, and others, there's a lot of debate about trips on that.
I think ultimately the question has to be, have you violated the building code? And there's that internal workings of whether you did or did not. Did this modification cause it to change codes, and did it affect other aspects of the property? Those are issues that go to the factual determination of whether or not the code was violated, which that's not the issue here. Our position is if you violate it, it's negligence per se, and that this is an expansion, really, of what the Shrove's case does, in that the Shrove's case is good, and I think I agree with that with respect to applying the A2 standard of fit and habitable condition. You have to have, since it's not a specific type of matter that needs to be violated, it really doesn't jump into the precursor of negligence per se. But when you do, yes.
Do you agree with counsel that the snow and ice condition is really close without the question of liability?
I don't believe so. I think that this court has issued that decision in Rankin versus Ross, that court decision and application of that as being a violation of the building code, I think, will apply.
So we will have to start carving out the section from the building code to take your presentation, or the building code to unreasonable, so now now into a much negotiation on all the exceptions, because those are the topics you need to be out.
I think that with respect to any negligence per se, and any building code or regulation, the underpinnings of negligence per se still require a specific requirement that has been violated. And to the extent that the Ohio Basic Building Code or any other regulation gives general types of clear your sidewalks type of things, I still think that does not fall within a negligence per se category. We have lots of legislation that may not be negligence per se if it's not specific.
How's the landlord figuring it out now? If you say a violation, it still is a violation of the building code, and the city doesn't notice anymore. Where can the landlord look to say, but it doesn't apply here?
I think it goes to the same issue that any negligence per se would be, to the extent that it's specific, they're charged with knowing. And a violation of specific requirements for load gradings and materials used in a deck are specific. And I dispute Mr. Chilson's argument as to that these are late, because they're not late. They may not be within the common language and interpretation of all of us here in this room. I don't know what the load requirements on a deck would be, but nonetheless, we have an individual who is in the business of providing a residence to tenants, and we recognize in this state by the legislature, has recognized it, and the Trove case has recognized it, that the tenants are on the downside of this relationship. They don't have the control that the landlords do, and to place this duty on the landlord who is using this property as a money-making venture to secure rents, to require them to be in compliance with regulations, and to have someone, if they are not knowing as to building codes, to have someone come out and confirm that they are in compliance with building codes is a requirement, and should be a requirement, because simply they are in a better position to not only put this property in compliance with these regulations, but also to suffer the loss in the event that they are not. And for that reason, I believe that the Second District's decision is well-founded reason, simply because the statute is clear evidence the legislature wants the landlords to accept and put into effect the regulations that were set forth by the building code. This court by Schroeder wants to give tort liability or tort relief type of damages if they violate this code. And clearly, with respect to the history of this court's decisions as to what constitutes negligence per se, this would be negligence per se, and the issue of notice is not necessary when there is a building code or regulation that has been established. And so Mr. Sikora would request this court to uphold the holding of the Second District Court.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hess. Chilson, you just have any time left? Yeah, you have over a minute. Sorry, it's too late.
The body of law encompassing landlord tenants law is an operation of the legislature and the courts. In 1974, the legislature passed the Landlord Tenant Act. In 1981, this court decided Schroes, which kept in place the notice requirement. Between 1981 and today, 2000, the General Assembly has never gone back and altered that particular opinion, which means this body of law is jointly reached by the legislature and the courts have always required notice. Provision with respect to removal of snow and ice. The basic building codes and regulation 4101-2-1-04 says this applies to formulate and adopt rules governing the erection, construction, repair, alteration, and maintenance of all buildings and all classes of buildings. Maintenance provisions dealing with ice and snow was found in the basic building code 102.8.2 that says exterior stairways shall be kept free of snow and ice. That would be what this court would do if it held strict liability based upon that. There, with respect to the notice provision should continue in this particular court, and the standards upon a landlord would be impossible to comply with. There would be no way that a landlord would ever comply with that. We ask that this court reverse the decision of the Second District and reinstate the decision of the initial trial judge in this case.
Why was this an interlocutory appeal to the Court of Appeals? Was it because there are other defendants?
There are other defendants in this particular case.
Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, since the case is submitted, you'll be advised for opinion.